This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thank you for being here this afternoon. We have another conversation with 2nd District Republican Congressman Cliff Bentz this afternoon. And though I said earlier today that he was in Washington, D.C., actually he is not the Senate, or rather Congress, off this week. And so he is out in Ontario. Congressman, thanks for being on.
Oh, it's great to be with you today, Kyle. Thanks for inviting me.
So let's talk about overall the first 6 months of the year as a member of Congress this year. What's your overall assessment of how things have gone?
Well, first of all, it's the first time in my political career, 12 years in the Oregon legislature before I went into Congress, where I'm actually in the majority. So I'll just say being in the majority is far more fulfilling and fun than being in the minority. Let me just share that right away. And it's great being chair, as I am, of the Subcommittee on Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries, and the Subcommittee on Natural Resources. And that's given me the opportunity to hold hearings, field hearings around the United States, and also design the playbook for the subcommittee. And that is a lot of fun and hugely fulfilling after so many years of just having to go whichever direction the Democrats wanted to take us. So that being in the majority is huge. Of course, we're in the majority in the House, but not in the Senate. And of course, President Biden's a Democrat. So we really just have 1/3 of the government and just barely. We just have 4 votes to spare. So getting things done is still extremely challenging because it's you can get it passed through the House, but it doesn't mean it's going to go through the Senate or across the president's desk. So we've done a lot of stuff in the House, and I've been very, very proud to be helping move good legislation forward, but a lot of it's just stalled out, of course, waiting for the Senate to do something, and the Senate's not controlled by we Republicans, so not much is happening there. I think Kevin McCarthy, for his first 6 months, has done a very good job of trying to hold us together. With those 4 votes, that's all you can't have go along out of the 222 of us. You have to have all but 4 if you're going to get something done. And so that's been hugely challenging. I think McCarthy has done as good a job as anybody in trying to hold a very different group of people, folks together. So I'll just stop there. But one thing I will point out, we have stopped the hemorrhaging of money. When the Democrats were in charge for the previous 2 years, they were spending money like drunken sailors. And I think that gives drunken sailors a bad name. And that's why we're now struggling with inflation. But that's all stopped now for the most part as we head a lot of the stuff the Democrats wanted to do off. I'll stop there.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, certainly, as you mentioned, being now in the majority in the House has been advantageous to you. But it seems like for only being in Congress a relatively low number of years, that you've made some pretty big strides in the leadership area. And certainly that was bolstered by the Republicans being in charge this year.
Well, it certainly was, although when I got there 2.5 years ago, I was immediately named as a ranking member on the water subcommittee because I enjoy a very strong background in that space. And I'm safe in saying I've done enough of it to be an expert in that space. But I'll just share with you, it's far better to be the chair than to be the ranking member in the committee. And what happened is the guy who was chair, Congressman Huffman out of Northern California, is now the ranking member. So we just traded chairs, but it's great to be speaker. It's great to be chairman of that particular committee.
Well, and given your background in Oregon and watching a lot of issues, you've really gotten involved there. In fact, talk about the hearing last week regarding the Lower Snake River Dam.
Right. That was a hearing I organized, it was my idea that we hold that hearing because it seemed to me that the Biden administration was doing all it could to try to have those four lower dams removed. As it turned out, so we held a hearing in Richland, Washington. The Democrats refused to participate, but we advertised the hearing. About 400 people were there or more. It was extremely well attended. The people who were there were very, very supportive of the dams and the power they generate and the navigation they allow all the way up to Lewiston, Idaho, with grain transport and other types of river traffic. And we learned from one of the scientists that testified that the problem is not the dams when it comes to the fish. The problem is the ocean, and we should be focusing our attention on why so few fish that make it to the ocean don't come back. And instead, the focus is entirely on the freshwater, shouldn't be surprising after you look at all the work that's been done on those dams to facilitate fish passage. But if you compare the Columbia River to the Fraser River, which does not have any dams on it up in British Columbia, you'll find that the Columbia is doing just as well as the Fraser, even though we have dams up and down the Columbia and on the Snake. And so something's going on in the ocean. Maybe the better word would be just as poorly, but we need to be looking at the ocean.
And talk about your thoughts regarding the Klamath River dams that are scheduled to be taken out, or at least the process started next year.
Actually, it's ongoing right now. They're being removed as we speak. At least one of them is. And it should be clear to everybody, I've opposed. I've done I don't know how many different things to try to stop the removal of the four Klamath River dams. It's been hugely frustrating because it was clear starting many years ago that a deal had been cut between the owner of those dams, and the public does not own those four dams. They are owned by Pacific Corps, or some people, you know, say Warren Buffett, but Pacific Corps is the owner of those dams, and they're privately held. And Pacific Corps made a deal with Oregon and with California to have the dams taken out. And so unless you have a buyer that's willing to step up and pay Mr. Buffett for his dams, pretty hard to say they're going to stay in there. Even though Doug LaMalfa, congressman of Northern California, good friend of mine, and I have done everything we can think of to try to keep those dams in.
And what is the status of the Snake River dams?
So the key issue right now on the Snake River dams, there are really two. One is that there was a environmental impact statement done on the dams by the National Marine Fisheries about 3 years ago, and it determined that the four dams should stay in. And there was a biological opinion issued based on that EIS, so indicating. As soon as that issued, and it was initiated during the Obama administration, so it wasn't like it was put together by the Trump administration, but once it came out, there was immediately a lawsuit filed about a year later by environmental organizations who have very much kind of made a business out of suing every time one of these new opinions came along. And that opinion now is in front of Judge Simon up in the U.S. District Court in Portland. He indicated that he issued a stay of proceedings to allow the parties to the litigation to negotiate. And they were basically, it's kind of like the parties are all on the same side. NIMS is the plaintiff, the defendant, but the environmental organizations are the plaintiffs in it. And they're supposed to get together and reach an agreement. Well, I think they both want the dams out. And so that's not really a negotiation so much as a plan being conducted without the benefit of elected people taking care of it. So I brought that to everybody's attention. It's my hope that we'll begin to slow down the attempt to, as I said, neuter those dams and ruin their electric generation capacity and also the navigation that goes up and down the river all for no good reason, because they've already done what needs to be done to protect the fish in the river as they pass by those dams.
Are you especially concerned with this issue in various rivers where this is being looked at, especially during a time when the nation appears to be shifting and placing more reliability, or rather more putting electricity out there versus natural gas and some of the other power sources? Reliance, that's the word I'm looking for, more reliance on electricity. Are you concerned about the generation of these dams not happening?
Well, that, you've hit it on the nose. The those dams, the four lower Snake River dams, generate about 1,000 megawatts, which is enough electricity to power about one-third of the state of Washington. They generate 1,000 megawatts of what we call firm power. And in a pinch, they can increase that up to about 2,800 megawatts. And this is the peak power that was used to bail California out during the really hot spells that have just been happening over the past few years. And also, if there's a real cold snap, then that water is running through those dams, and it's reliable power, unlike wind, unlike solar. And so you've got to have that balancing power, which firm hydropower provides. So yes, I'm worried. And that was made exceptionally clear in the hearing the last week.
Are you hearing similar concerns from fellow GOP lawmakers?
Absolutely. And Kathy Morris-Rogers, who's chair of Energy and Commerce Committee in Washington, D.C., was there at the hearing. It's her district within which those dams are located, and she was there to make that case, along with Congressman Dan Newhouse. And then we had a congressman from Mike Collins from down south in Georgia who came out. He's on National Resource Committee, and those people all made exactly that point.
Let's switch gears. What about the budget deficit? We've talked about this in a past interview or two. It seems like neither party really wants to address the budget deficit.
Well, it's certainly true for the Democrats, but I would say that we Republicans are addressing it as best we can, given that we only control one-third of government. And that was, of course, what happened in our debt ceiling negotiations, where I think our team did an exceptionally good job once you recognize we have one-third of the government. And we absolutely have to do something about the deficit. And we did, in the negotiations on the debt ceiling, reduce the amount of federal spending. We'd like to have reduced it more, but we were trying to make a deal that would actually keep the government from defaulting on its debts. And I want to point out that those of us that voted to try to get that deal in place knew that if we didn't have the money to pay our bills, then people who are on Social Security and people who are reliant upon Medicare and our veterans and other people would not be guaranteed to get their money. And so those of us that stepped up and made that tough vote recognize that you can't jerk the financial rug out from underneath people once they become accustomed to receiving that Social Security check. You can't suddenly say, "Oh, surprise, that's just not going to work." And so now we're struggling because it's very difficult to slow down spending once it gets started. It's like Santa Claus taking the presents out from underneath the tree. It's very difficult, but we are working on it, and I'm looking forward to hearing from people to suggest what they think we should spend less money on.
And speaking of hearing from people, are you going to be out? And of course, your district is bigger than a lot of states, frankly, geographically. Are you going to be out in Douglas County at all later in the summer?
Yeah, yes, we're actually scheduling that right now. We're now to a point where we think we know where we're going to be. But I don't have that schedule in front of me, but we have 20 counties, and obviously one of them, Douglas County, we're going to be there. Exactly when, I don't know, perhaps in August soon. And we make sure we let everybody know in advance so people can come in and share their ideas about what I should be doing differently or otherwise. I will, as you said, My district's about three quarters of the state of Oregon, and bigger than the state of Washington, as long as we're speaking about Washington State. It's a big space, but 20 counties, so we'll be doing 20 town hall meetings.
Well, and it's interesting, even though in news segments, you know, we talked about redistricting and boundary changes and all of that, some voters who maybe, frankly, pay a little less attention to certain things and as they come along, were somewhat surprised. I got comments directed at me when they wondered why your name and Democrats were on the ballot and not Congressman DeFazio. Of course, he was stepping down. But not everybody seemed to realize that they had a different congressman in a good chunk of Douglas County.
Right. Well, I was happy that I ended up with more of Douglas County because I know the folks down there, and I've spent a bunch of time when I was on the Oregon Water Resource Commission years ago as a citizen member. Traveled through that space, and so I'm very familiar with timber and how it works. So I was happy, but yeah, but those lines are drawn by the state legislature, and so I had nothing to say about it. They took Bend and Redmond out of my district and gave it over to basically the Willamette Valley. It's now part of the Clackamas area, and so when they did that, they took away the people that were in my district and gave me more land.
Are the parties as polarized as it seems?
Well, I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes because in a lot of ways, the people that we represent demand it. They do not. Many of those who talk to me say, we want you fighting for us, not compromising. We want you standing up for us and doing the right thing. And most of the time, the right thing that we Republicans believe in isn't what the Democrats believe in. So that polarization is real, and it's very difficult to overcome. One of the things I did, I took the advice of one of the congresswomen who's been there for years. I said, how do I meet Democrats? And she said, well, join the prayer breakfast group. So I did, and I've been going for a couple of years. In fact, I'm part of the two guitar band that plays for the prayer breakfast group once a week for about an hour on Thursdays, and I've been able to meet Democrats there. And so you try to find common ground wherever you can, and then get to know people, and it works. You get to know them, and it's one of the few places where you actually have Republicans and Democrats talking to each other.
I think you are qualified as the first member of Congress I've ever met who plays guitar.
Not very well. let's be clear on it, but well enough to play with my friend Tim Wahlberg, who's the other half of the band.
Well, that's interesting. As you try to navigate through Washington D.C., how different is this than being in the Oregon State Legislature?
Well, I would say it's extraordinarily different. There were about 90 people in the Oregon legislature, and there's 435 in Congress, and that's just Congress, not counting the 100 senators. So 535 people, and then there's that president, so 536. So it's quite different from just sheer scale. And then the other huge difference is that, yes, I think about Oregon all the time. I represent Oregon, but you're in a national job, and so the amount of attention that is paid to what you do is dramatically greater than what was the case in Salem. You come out after you vote and walk down the front steps of the Capitol building, and there'll be 50, maybe even as many as 100 reporters and television cameras and other things waiting between the door as you walk out of off the floor and try to get back to your office. So it's just the press alone is just enormously bigger. And a good example, when we had this hearing up in Richland, Washington, it was on C-SPAN, and the estimates are between 300,000 and 2 million people are watching C-SPAN at any one time. So we were on for 2 hours, 2.5 hours nationwide. So that's a huge difference. And the issues, you know, they say Congress is the the NFL of politics. I think that's correct. But you know what it means? There's no safety net. You're the ones. You've got to get it right. And that's why I work most of my time now on trying to get it right.
Are you particularly concerned with the direction of the Biden administration?
Well, there's a lot of directions there. The one that was of greatest concern, there were many, but the one I'll mention was how much spending they were doing with no regard to how we were going to pay the bills or the impact it was going to have on inflation or the border. The border is a crazy, crazy situation. And by the way, I support legal immigration. We have to have smart people coming into this United States as our birth rates drop, plummet. And as we have to have people helping keep our economy going, but you cannot have the border thrown open the way it is. It does not work. And so that's something he shouldn't be doing. And on the issue of energy, some of the crazy things the president's done to drive up the cost of energy for people make no sense. And we've had some good luck in that China has not come back strong after COVID. If it had, our fuel prices would be through the roof. So yeah, there's three things. There are many others, but to say I'm concerned would be an understatement.
What are your priorities going through the summertime? Maybe things of particular interest you're working on in Congress.
So just about an hour ago, I was on the telephone with Jim Jordan, who is chair of Judiciary. I'm on Judiciary. I'm on two subcommittees there, also the antitrust sub and the intellectual property sub. We were on the phone because next week we have the head of the FBI in front of us, Christopher Wray, and we'll be going over with him the Durham report that we just got a couple of weeks ago. So that's of great interest because it appears to me that the FBI has been out of control, and many of the things that were done early in the Trump administration were simply wrong. And so we'll be asking him what he was doing. And I'm looking forward to that. On the antitrust and on the administrative state subcommittee, which is what the antitrust sub and judiciary does, I'm looking forward to working in that space on a series of issues. And then going back to my Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee, I'll be looking at a hearing 2 weeks from now on the enormous cost of the Endangered Species Act and the damage it's done to our forests and our communities in Western Oregon, in fact, across Oregon and across the United States. So those are just a few of the things I'll be focusing on.
All right, we are out of time for now. Hope to talk again soon. Congressman Cliff Bentz, thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle, very, very much.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.